about sunrise? What about rain? What about all the things that you said we were to gain? What about killing fears? Is there a time?
Welcome to Compartiendo Infierno. I am Rudy Daniel Espinoza, and we have Rafael Montaves and Ruben Bermejo in Eco Leganés interviewing Hugo Bardi.
Did you ever stop this notice? This crying herb, this weeping show.
Bienvenidos a Compartiendo Infierno. Hoy tenemos en el programa a una de las personas que más sabe del cambio climático, probablemente de las más influyentes en lo referente a los límites del crecimiento. En definitiva, es un referente para todos los que ahora llamamos colasistas, aunque los colasistas, como dice Jorge Rietzmann, no son los que denuncian el problema, sino los que lo causan. Tenemos con nosotros nada menos que a Hugo Bardi. Ahora bien, este no será un programa como los habituales, ya que la entrevista está hecha en el idioma de Shakespeare. Pienso sacar una versión doblada, pero ya os adelanto que va a tardar.
Welcome to the community station of Leganés, Eco Leganés. Today we are going to speak with Hugo Bardi. Thank you for your time, Hugo.
Thanks to you for the interest.
Hugo Bardi is a Florentine professor of physical chemistry who has spent his life researching on the depletion of resources, climate science, and system dynamics, among many other areas of science. He is a member of the Association for the Study of Peak Oil and Gas, a member of the Club of Rome, and editor of Biophysical Economics and Sustainability, and author of several books. The MTC is his most recent book. Hugo, could you tell us what made you stop Cassandra's legacy?
That you start with a question about what made me stop Cassandra's legacy, not what made me start Cassandra's legacy. So it's all right. It's not a big change. I have been, you see, the story starts in 2001 when I saw the collapse of the Twin Towers in New York. And that made me think there was something badly wrong in the world. And then from then on, I started studying collapses. Collapse is something that you start slow, you grow, you do something, everything looks stable, everything looks fine, and then suddenly everything collapses. And the initial figure where I found some inspiration for this is Cassandra. You know the story of Cassandra, the most beautiful daughter of King Priam of Troy, who tried to alert the Trojans about the impending doom of the town, of the horse and the Greeks and all that. And so I titled my blog in the name of Cassandra, so Cassandra's Legacy, the memory of Cassandra, could we learn something from Cassandra? Turns out that we cannot learn anything because essentially Cassandra is not one person. It is a law of the universe. We are all Cassandras. When you try to say, well, maybe there is a risk, something will go wrong, something will... It is a destiny of people not to be believed when you play the role of the prophet Doom. And I'll tell you something more about that. Before getting interested in collapses, things awful, horrible, the destruction, death, everything collapsing, I was working in the aerospace industry as a chemistry, I was studying materials for various companies involved in manufacturing planes. And when you do this job in things that have to fly, and if you want a plane to fly, you have to be extremely careful in what you put inside a plane. And I worked on that for about 10 years. 10 years, and as a scientist, sometimes you are enthusiastic. Oh, I have an idea, boss, why don't we do that? Wait! Will the plane fly? And you have to prove that the plane flies with your trick, whatever it is. So you, in the aerospace industry, you are very, very careful, but not in politics. And we are all lucky that the planes we travel on are not designed by politicians for evident reasons. So anyway, at the end, Cassandra didn't seem to me anymore a good wave of inspiration. Also because I had a row with Facebook, they thought they didn't like something I wrote in my blog, so they censored me, but that's another story. But anyway, I thought you need something more philosophical, something deeper, actually. Yes, Cassandra, we don't know, we have no report of what she said something. She wrote nothing. So I took inspiration from the Roman philosopher Seneca,
mm-hmm.
who left to us a big corpus of works.
Which is actually your the blog that continued the work. And on that blog, on the Seneca effect, you explain why decline is faster than growth. Could you briefly explain what is the Seneca effect?
This is something in a certain way obvious, because already Seneca the philosopher had said it back in about 50 or 60 AD, so almost 2000 years ago, and he wrote that in a letter. And Seneca was, I think, the first blogger in history, because he had a style of writing which was extremely impacting. He was not a scientist. Seneca was also a politician. He was running the empire for a while. He was the boss. And he had this way of writing things which impact on your mind. Would you like me to tell you the Seneca effect in Latin?
Okay.
Let me try. Incrementa lente exeunt, sed festinantur in damnum. We all speak Latin languages, normally mm-hmm. Spanish or Italian. We have this common heritage from Latin, but this sentence is not so easy to translate into Spanish or Italian or English. Anyway, it says, growth is slow, but decline is rapid, which is a law. You can study it with various methods. It's not like a law of thermodynamics, but it is something that holds for complex systems, which are the kind of system which can collapse. Not everything collapses. Take a piece of rock. A piece of rock does not collapse, doesn't do anything. But a human being, myself, yourself, whoever is listening to us, we can collapse. Mm-hmm. This is bad. And when we collapse, normally, unfortunately, it is rather fast. And it happens. And it is because the system is strange. These systems, you discover when you study this system that they have an internal communication system, so that when they say something, every part of the system collaborate to destroy the system. It happens.
How many blocks do you have? How many blocks have you got? Because you've got a lot of them.
A few, but the main one is the one you mentioned, the Seneca effect. Seneca effect, I try to write one post every week.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the point. Then I have a blog in Italian, which is more or less a translation. We call it L'Effetto Seneca, El Effetto Seneca, como en español. And then I have a blog, which is, I think, the one I like most, because It is a blog about the holobions. Holobions, unfortunately you cannot see me, but I have a t-shirt with holobions on it. And the holobions are creatures which are the fundamental element of biology. It's a fascinating story that...
one of your blogs is the Proud Holobions. Hugo,
we wanted to ask you,
what is a holobions for the people who are listening, and what is the relation between human beings with the rest of the biosphere?
Okay. Ruben, first of all, you are a holobiont. Raphael is a holobiont. I am a holobiont. Everybody is a holobiont. Everything alive is a holobiont. A tree, an animal, a bush, a lion, whatever you have. They're all holobiont. Holobiont is an idea that was proposed. It is old. The term goes back to the 1930s. It means a whole living system. But it was proposed in its modern form by the biologist Lynn Margulis. Lynn Margulis said, and not everybody knows her, she was one of the great minds of the 20th century. Great woman. She just think that she was the co-inventor of the concept of Gaia, Gaia's the goddess of the earth, together with together with James Lovelock. You know that James Lovelock is credited of having invented the concept of Gaia, but they invented it together, Lovelock and Margulis. Not a small feat. It's one of those ideas which inform a whole century. Not a simple thing. If you think of an idea, many ideas. You have ideas, Raphael. You have ideas, Ruben. I have ideas, but we don't change a century. We don't have normally. I don't know. Maybe you can, but normally we cannot change the atmosphere of the whole century with that one of our ideas. The holobiont is a kind of idea which can transform the whole vision of an entire field, like biology, but it can permeate also economics, system dynamics, physics, politics also, and social systems. A holobiont is a group of creatures which collaborate, but it is a group of entities where there is no hierarchy. In the sense, now we are discussing, me, Ruben, Raphael, we are discussing, and we are discussing together. Change in information. We are a three people holobiont, actually many more, because I think a few more people are listening to us, but three people already can form a holobiont. If we remain, we exchange information, and that's the secret of the holobiont. As inside yourself, you know that about half of your weight is made of creatures which are not you. Bacteria, archaea, viruses, mitochondria, all sorts of creatures inside you, which are not your genetic code, different. And when you stay together, Ruben and Raphael, you are right now exchanging bacteria and viruses because you are breathing. You are. And that's the essential point of communication among holobionts. Holobionts exchange genetic material all the time. I shake your hand, I cannot do it because we are virtual communication. But if I shake hands with you, I pass to you a little of my microbiota. Ooh. My bacteria, my viruses. That's a good point. Should not wear a face mask because you avoid this communication. That's the point. A holobiont is all the time exchanging. And the social group is a holobiont because we have a social group of friends. Very simple. We exchange ideas. We are a holobiont of friends. And Gaia herself, the goddess, she is a holobiont. And once you have this idea, you can explain a huge number of things that otherwise cannot be explained. So what is Gaia? People said, no, she cannot exist. Why Gaia cannot exist? Because evolution could not produce her, because there is no competition. There's only one Gaia if she exists. So whom does she compete with? That was the criticism that Richard Dawkins, you know probably the name, Richard Dawkins gave this definition. This problem with Gaia cannot exist because there's no natural selection that brings the ecosystem to develop a Gaia. No, because Gaia is not an organism, Gaia is a holobiont, and holobionts naturally arise from the interaction of the elements of the system. Did you know this?
Me estoy acordando de Kropotkin.
Yeah, he's thinking about Kropotkin. He's going more to the political way. Yeah.
Also, political parties are holobionts, and not maybe not the good kinds, not always.
La ayuda mutua de Kropotkin. Yeah, ese libro me estoy acordando.
He's thinking about Piotr Kropotkin's mutual help.
Kropotkin, I'm not sure I know the. Anyway, okay.
Mm-hmm. Well, once you reach to the conclusion that a scientist is not difficult to bribe, and what is more, that it is legal, when did scientists first discover that the continuous emission of greenhouse gases would provoke climate change?
Well, that's a long story, very long story, that I could tell you that right now, this year, it makes the 50th anniversary of the publication of the first report to the Club of Rome, the one titled The Limits to Growth. And I have the book in my hands here. You cannot see it if you're listening, but Ruben Raphael can see it. It is 1972 book, and it was one of the starting point of the what we call today environmentalism. But there was very little about carbon dioxide. But it was there already. I can show you, but one figure. Back in 1972, it was already known that CO2 was a greenhouse gas, and it was changing the temperature of the atmosphere. And of course, at that time, they could not think that it was a fundamental problem. They mentioned it and said, we don't know exactly what it's going to do, but we have to take even that into account. And then we arrive to the point in which we are now. But I invite you to consider that this book that was published 50 years ago had already a good vision, could already describe the interaction of the elements of the holobiont, which is the Earth system, including humans. So the whole idea of the book was that you used a computer program, which is in itself is not necessarily smart. That doesn't mean, but the beauty of using, it was an early form of artificial intelligence. I mean, also that you had to be very careful about artificial intelligence because, as you know, it may be, first it may be evil, second it may do disasters. But the point of artificial intelligence or enhancement of the human mind is that it helps you to keep track of the many parameters of a system, which otherwise you would not be able to keep track of. Let me explain. When you discuss with people, what is the problem? They will say, climate change. Or someone, no, because it's war. Hey, communism. Oh, no, because the immigrants. Or it's Donald Trump. Or whatever. But in Spain, I'm sure you have your answer. In Italy, it's Berlusconi. The system is complex, and it's very easy for one of us. We are all limited in our brains, and we lose track of what's going on because there are too many parameters. So you need forms of artificial intelligence to help you balancing the effect of all the parameters of the system. Otherwise, you will naturally, as a human being, you will focus on one all the time. Ask any politician. What is the problem? One problem. Right? It depends which politician, which abortion. No, Russians, Putin, Biden. Politician is a man with one problem. And they want usually to solve it by bombing it. Mm. But the world is complex. And so if you... So back to the 1972 study, they had already had this help for the human mind. Help, this is not, no prophecy, no crystal ball, no miracle. Just help to the human mind to figure out the hierarchy of the problems. Well, it was a great progress by all means. It was very interesting. And they had basically five main parameters, but very simple. Climate, mineral resources, human population, industrial capital, agriculture. But already for one of us, for a man or a woman, a person, it's difficult to keep track of five parameters. Try it, it won't be easy. You need some help. And here, you have this. You have to keep the human mind on top of the program, on top of the artificial intelligence system. Otherwise, you're led, you don't know where. But if you control from with your mind and use this as a help, then it gives you a tremendous power to evaluate the behavior of the system. And this was the great moment of this study in 1972, because they could compare, frame, understand how the system was going to evolve. And now about your question, the result was that climate change was not my problem, not the first to arrive. If you go again to Seneca says, well, you grow and then you collapse. So this book, 1972 book, told what is causing, what will be starting the collapse? It will not be climate change, you will collapse because of resource depletion, which is what's happening, actually. Climate change is doing a lot of damage. Don't let me say that climate change is not important. It is, but it is coming a little later.
Well,
right now, we have big problems with supply of mineral commodities, energy, all that. And that's, you can see it because you have this mastery of the system, which tells you how the system is behaving, because otherwise it is ideology. You discuss with anyone, environmentalist, politician, man in the street, say, what is the big problem? Climate change? No. Resource depletion? No. High prices? No. There is a hierarchy. You have to try to do your best to understand. And this is what a philosopher can do, a typical approach. Seneca, I don't know if Seneca was a good philosopher, actually. He was. He spoke a lot, but the things he did were not always good. But anyway, he had this attitude. Stoicism had this attitude. See the system. Stoicism, in the philosophy of Seneca, was this good idea. Say, you change the things you can change, accept those which you cannot change. This is not Seneca. Seneca, it was Epictetus who said that, but it's the basic idea of Stoicism. You do what you can, but you accept what you cannot act upon.
Well, the assessment report of the Intergovernmental Panel of Climate Change, the IPCC, has been already published, and it calls for immediate and deep carbon cuts to slow climate change. However, the major cuts have taken place in the funds for this UN Climate Change Panel. What would you like to comment about this IPCC assessment report?
Which is an exceptionally good report made by the best experts in the world in certain matters, but it is narrow. It is narrow because, correctly, I mean to say they are wrong. They are absolutely the best scientists in the world doing this, but they are only seeing a part of the problem. And yes, the problem exists. The problem is there, But I think honestly that right now we have more pressing problems which we have to solve. And if we solve the problems like of depletion of fossil fuel, then on the run we also solve the climate problem. And because right now, I do not know how it is going in Spain, but we risk freezing next winter. But when in Spain, maybe not, because you are in a different, maybe not next winter, maybe not the winter of 2004, but we have a problem of survival, physical survival, because we need energy to survive. In Europe, we are 350 million people, and we need energy for transportation, for heating, for air conditioning, for food preservation, for doing everything we do with energy. If we don't have this energy, well, we are tens of millions of people who die. Not a problem. Climate change is also will also kill hundreds of millions of people, but not next year. I think even if you ask the people of IPCC, they will say, no, it will not be for next year, not for 10 years. We still have 10, 20 years before climate change kills us. It will. If we had infinite amounts of fossil fuels, climate change would kill us.
Well, that's not much time. That isn't much time.
No, it's not much, but in 20 years, many things can happen. As you can see now, things are happening that were absolutely impossible to predict or even to imagine. The changes are enormous. So we are being forced out of fossil fuels faster than we would have liked to. But it is what's happening. Right now, the system is collapsing. Several ways for the system to collapse. In this case, was not predictable because the famous book, the 1972 books, predicted. They say, okay, now around 2020, more or less, the system will start collapsing. They didn't say how and why, but they say why, but not how exactly. Now we are seeing the system is collapsing by separating in different parts. The system is breaking down in separate parts, which is one of the typical ways for complex systems to collapse. So you didn't expect this 2 years, not 2 years, 2 months ago. You would not expect that Russia and China would be completely separated from the rest of the world. There was a line, there was a border, but I mean, you would exchange people, you exchange money, you exchange goods, you exchange gas, fuel. Within 2 months, the system has broken down. You have now a sort of barrier. The gas is still passing, but money is not passing anymore. People barely pass, and no oil. And so you see that, what does it mean? It means that Europe, Spain, Italy, Germany, will have less fossil fuels. Will be more expensive because we had contracts with Russia. Russia would provide gas for us at a low price. This was important, especially for Central Europe, not so much for Spain, but especially for Italy, Greece, Germany, and Austria. It doesn't come anymore, which means that we have a demand, using the economist jargon. There is a demand which is not satisfied by the offer anymore. The offer is there, but it is on the other side of the breaking line. So what does it mean? When there is demand and there is no supply, prices increase. And if prices increase, we have to use less. And that's a sort of drastic reduction in the consumption of energy, which is going to happen right now. Evidently, I don't know if somebody had planned it or it happened by itself. You know, it is always very difficult to say. Everybody speaks about conspiracies and people have done this because they think some complex idea to conquer the world, or maybe they're just stupid. I think the last hypothesis, that they are stupid, is worth a lot of attention, because I don't know if anyone had planned to separate Russia from Europe.
Mm-hmm.
But it's happened. And now the consequence is that we are becoming rapidly poorer than before because we have less resources to use. Very simple. And this is one way in which the collapse, which was thought, imagined, probably occurring now by the 1972 study, is happening.
One of your fields of study is renewable energy. Is there any hope in renewable energy or not? Because, well, we heard Turiel saying and some others that it completely depends on oil, but if it is so, then there's no hope. But you say absolutely yes. Why?
There is absolutely hope, because we need to understand what we mean from hope. We have been doing studies. In our studies, we see that it is possible to change. It is possible to stop using fossil fuels and move to renewable energy and obtain an amount of energy which is of the same order of magnitude or even more than from fossil fuels. But this means that you have to invest in something new. It's like, you know, you have I have a good investment. Why don't you buy stocks in this company, which will so surely grow? Your financial consultant may tell you, I have this idea, let's buy Argentine bonds or something like that. But you have to have money to invest. Maybe it works. Same with the renewable energy. You have to invest money into renewable energy. Otherwise, it will not appear by itself from the sky with a parachute. You have to pay for it. And the problem is that since the economy is collapsing in itself, we may not have the resources needed to move from fossil fuels to renewable energy smoothly. Smoothly means simply, if it is not, it means simply that a lot of people will die in the process, and unfortunately.
Well, you also speak not only about collapse, but also about different kinds of extermination of different peoples. What should we expect? You said 10 years, no more. Should we be afraid of ecofascism?
Ah, good question. That's my next book, which is titled The Age of Exterminations, which is a subject which is difficult to approach from a system dynamics calculation models, because you don't know, I don't know, maybe you know, but I don't, why people kill people. There is some reason that causes these waves of extermination. What I can tell you is that we also modeled that, we did some studies on that, and there is no periodicity, no simple way, it is essentially random. You see that the probability for a major war to occur is inversely proportional to the size of the war. So a big war happens less frequently than small wars. This is what, maybe you know the term, it's called a power law. It works for law. Which means only that a very big war can happen at any time. There's no way to predict it, no way to, not even to stop it. Like what we're seeing now is a progression toward war. Maybe it will stop, hopefully, but if it doesn't stop, we'll have the Third World War. And we will have it in this year. So it will be somewhat bad, I think you agree. But in reality, these kind of things are beyond human control. Because if you study the record of wars during the past, we did it the past 600 years, you see that there is a power law, which means that they are a self-organized element of the system. It is an emergent property of the system. actually depends on population. There is a relation. More population, people start killing each other. I don't know of any way to stop that. If somebody of you knows, people listening to us, if you have ideas, please tell me, because not to me, I cannot do anything, but if somebody can stop that, please do.
Hugo, what is the role of women scientists at present time?
Women scientists? Oh, that's very nice people. Women scientists. My last book, or the latest book, was written together with my former student Ilaria. She's a wonderful lady. She's now in Cambridge doing research on the energy transition, and I'm working now with another wonderful researcher whose name is Anastasia Makarieva. She is from St. Petersburg. She is an absolutely outstanding researcher in the field of climate. She's a top level, absolutely amazing mind that she can think. She's another lady who has a possibility to change the viewpoint for a whole century, like Lynn Margulis. Anastasia Makarieva, in my opinion, she has the power to change the view of a whole field of science, like climate science. Because she has this powerful ideas, but you don't need to have a powerful mind, otherwise I would not be doing any scientific work. But you need to have the right ideas to grasp the system. So what I can see is that women, if you let them do their job in peace, they in science, they can often do much better than men. In my modest opinion, of course, you know, it's the I can cite other researchers like Donella Meadows, who was one of the co-writers of this the Limits to Growth, which we are we have been working on. But really, the women, my modest opinion, they grasp faster the concept of holobiont, and holobiont is among other things the basis of scientific progress. Because scientists form holobionts, which then produce science. So they are social holobionts. We get together. We are not scientists. I mean, I don't know if you are scientists. Maybe you are. But the way we do it in science, we collect in a meeting, in a conference. It's a big holobiont of scientists, and they exchange information. And this information in some ways is processed by this collective mind of the holobiont, and it becomes a new theory, a new idea, a new view of the world, like the one that has been produced by Anastasia. Anastasia has this, together with her advisor, Viktor Goshko, who fortunately not anymore with us, this idea of the biotic pump. Have you ever heard of this?
The biotic pump?
The biotic pump is a new concept in ecosystem behavior, and it says something that our peasants, farmers of old, they already know, that trees bring rain. Dr. Makarieva took this idea, and Professor Goshko, they took this idea and they made it quantitative. They explained why. But once you have this idea, it is extremely powerful, because you know what you should not do. If you cut the forest, then you lose the rain, because the rain is not there. We say sometimes, our old man would say, God brings rain. No, God helps the forest to bring rain. If you cut the forest, God or the goddess is not pleased, say no more rain, and you die of starvation. The goddess is a little bit nasty at times. She's not exactly benevolent. So we have this tremendously powerful idea, tremendous power. We know how to manage the ecosystem, what to do with trees and forests. Just right now, we are working with Anastasia on this idea of how, in which conditions, forests actually bring more water or less, and how you should do this in such a way to optimize the system. And this also has effects of global effects, because it affects the whole climate. Forests cool the earth, no doubt about that. Just not just CO2. Well, there is not just one solution, which is reducing CO2. It is to be done, absolutely. But forests can reduce the temperature of this planet, and maybe even better than other solutions. And you see, there are ideas. There is boom. The human mind, for good or for bad, is still a powerful element in the present moment. It is not used very much. I don't know what's your impression, but sometimes you have the impression that not everybody has something inside the head. But there are incredible innovations in thinking, in technology, in renewable energy has had an incredible progress during the past 10, 20 years. And in my modest opinion, if we can put into practice the concept of holobiont, then we can live in peace and harmony with the planet.
Unfortunately, in these last years, in Western societies, we have left behind the countryside and a lot of knowledge that all those peasants you were speaking about knew. And well, we have forgotten crucial knowledge and information that we really need to continue living. That's my point of view. Hugo, is there anything we haven't asked you that you may want to say before we end this interview?
Well, I would conclude with a statement by Seneca, my person that I like. And you see, he had this idea that collapses fast, but he also said something different, the opposite. He said there is no success that did not arise from a past disaster. So the world goes up and down. Right now it's a very bad moment, but it's a basic point of the system. If the system go up and down, there will be better times in the future. I'm sure of that.
Mm-hmm. So yes, we all will learn something from all these bad situations. I think you mean with that sentence by Seneca. Hugo Bardi, thank you very much for this interview. Hugo Bardi is a professor of physical chemistry at the University of Florence. Thank you for this interview and your work, and of course thank you for your time and for being with us today in the community station of Leganés.
It was a pleasure, and sorry for pestering with these strange ideas of mine, but thank you for listening.
Thank you, Hugo.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you very much.
And have a nice evening.
The same to you. Bye.
Bye.
Bye-bye.
In 1972, a book changed the world. The Club of Rome commissioned a report that shifted how we see what humans are doing to the planet. Looking back, 5 decades later, what happened next? What did we do and not do? What did we learn? And what happened now? In The Limits to Growth, a team from MIT studied the way humans were using the resources of the Earth. Using sophisticated computer modeling, the researchers developed scenarios to map all possible paths from humanity, the global economy, and the impact of the planet. Were their models right? What did the rest of the world do about it? Now, in 2022,
The Club of Rome have brought two of the original authors from the 1972 book, Dennis Miller and Jorgen Rander, along with an array of other world-renowned thinkers, scientists, analysts, and economists from across the globe to answer this question and grade with the most acute issue of our time. In the first section, Echoes of a Great Book, Hugo Bardi sets the scene with an in-depth examination of the original report and the effect it has had on how we might think about what humanity is doing to the world. Jorgen Rander and Dennis Miller then ask what the first book actually said and answer the most common question that people ask about the book and progress signs. Further exploration of the impact and consequence of the groundbreaking original book follow. Next, in the Still the Economy, But What Kind section, the contributors examine the economy ideas that have informed an arisen from the limit to growth in the following decades and critic those assumptions and notions. They ask what must change if we are to stay within the limits set by nature. In the New Lenses for a Different Future section, thinkers from continents and cultures across the globe expand on their unique experience of acting in and observing a world that may use all its resources before we wake up and act. The Did Well Learn, We section ponder where we go from here. Has humanity taken in the lesson of the limits to growth? What have we learned in the meantime? And most importantly, what can we do about it now? Limits and the Beyond, 50 years on from the limits to growth, what did we learn and what's next? Reaches back half a century to when the original report shook the world into realizing that we live on a finite planet, bring it sharply up to date and look clear eyes into the future. Limits and Beyond focus the mind of the pressing issue of sustainability, global economics and ecology that global politics and institutions need to grapple with to ensure that survival of the human race. Limits and Beyond is the book that will shape the conversation about our place on the earth from the next 50 years and beyond. Can we save the planet and the human race? Buy Limits and Beyond to find out.
Puedes escuchar Compartiendo Infierno en directo en Eco Leganés en streaming el miércoles a las 6 de la tarde. En diferido puedes descargarlo desde la página de Eco Leganés y desde la Unión de Radio de la Comunidad de Madrid. Y los jueves a las 12 de la mañana puedes escuchar Compartiendo Infierno en la FM de Radio Almaina en Granada.
En la 88.5.
My way, so no loose ends, nothing to see. dreams are mad, a head to man. I love the girl, but God only knows it's getting hard to see the sun coming through.